Friday night from 9 to 11 Central Time on 90.1 FM and FM HD1, KPFT Houston. Callers are accepted about 9:45 p.m. Central Time at 713-526-5738. Y'all have a good week. Remember, it's KPFT Houston.
That is the percolating beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. And that means it's 6 p.m. on a Wednesday, and time for So What's Your Story. We're the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to stories and the art of telling them right here on KPFT, Houston's community radio. I'm your host today, Eric Heen, backed up by the most talented team on radio, and every week on So What's Your Story, we feature guests who'll come in here and take us on magical journeys through their stories. Well, our first guest today is Morgan Reynolds. Morgan is a storyteller, speaker, workshop leader, and teacher. Morgan lives with her husband and three kids in Rexburg, Idaho, and works to send out stories that create connections between us. Morgan performs and leads workshops in schools and festivals around the country. In October of last year, Morgan was invited to perform at the National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee. Hey, Morgan, great to have you here on So What's Your Story.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. I'm going to start the story with a little song. Ba ba da 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 da. Da, 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 da. Everyone loved Rabbit. Rabbit loved to sing, and he loved to dance. And everyone loved to watch him sing and watch him dance, except the lion. The lion hated singing, and he hated dancing. And he would just sit with his arms folded, growling at Rabbit, saying, "I don't dance. I don't sing." And one day, he was feeling particularly cranky, and he was sitting under a tree, and from the distance he heard, ba ba da 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 da, and he knew that it was Rabbit coming, singing and dancing, and he decided that the time had come. He was going to teach Rabbit a lesson. In 2016, our family moved to Montana. And right before we moved to Montana, I had had this dream. And in this dream, I had seen someone on a stage performing in front of children and adults, and they were acting out a play all by themselves. And when I woke up, I thought, I could do that. You see, I was a theater major in college, and I really missed performing, but with young children and a difficult schedule, I didn't really get to do it that much. But after this dream, I realized I could get on stage and I could take a play or a story and I could act it out all by myself. And so I started doing that. And then I realized I didn't actually invent storytelling, that people were already doing this all around the country. I started a YouTube channel, and my mom and I, when we moved to Montana, I told my husband that I would go to Montana as long as once a year I got a solo trip with my mom. And when I discovered that storytelling existed and that there was this really cool place called Jonesboro that had some storytelling events happening, my mom and I decided to meet there. And we were going to see a real storyteller. And her name was Laura Sims, and she is incredible. And I was so excited. And I was also terrified because I was worried that I wasn't really a storyteller. And I thought to myself, what if what she does isn't what I do? And so I remember sitting in the audience with my mom, and I was thrilled and excited. And I was also just shaking with fear of what I was about to see. Now, the lion waited behind the bushes. And as the music got louder, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, he jumped out from behind the bushes and he roared with everything he had. And it worked. It scared the music right out of Rabbit. And he just stood there, silent. And Lion laughed. And don't you sing and dance now? And then he turned and he began to walk away. As I sat and watched Laura Sims tell a story, I basked in it. She was so talented. She was just weaving these stories and with wonder and magic and humor. And I looked at what she did. And even though I saw that I had so far to go, something felt familiar. And I realized, I think I am a storyteller. Rabbit watched Lion walk away. But then he heard a beat. And that beat was all he needed. Ba ba da 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 ba da 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 da. And I realized as I watched Laura Sims, I didn't dance like her or sing like her, but it was the same beat. Ba ba da 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 da. Da 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 da. And Lion turned around and glared at Rabbit. And he began to prowl towards her. I don't dance. I don't sing. But Rabbit kept singing. Da 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 da. I don't dance. I don't. But then the very tip of Lion's tail began to twitch to the beat. Ba, ba, da, 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 da. And then his hips began to shake. Ba, da, 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 da. And then his arms and his shoulders, and he began dancing towards Rabbit. Ba, da, 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 da. And the whole time, I don't dance. I don't sing. I don't dance. Ba, da, 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 da. And Lion was dancing towards Rabbit, and Rabbit was laughing until he saw that Lion was crying. And Lion came closer to Rabbit and said, I don't dance. I don't sing. And Rabbit put his paw on the Lion's chest and echoed the beat. Oh, Lion, that sure looks like singing and dancing to me. And sometimes I think that we look at all the different ways that people tell stories or sing stories or dance stories or run through their stories, and we think, I don't dance. I don't sing like that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to. All we have to do is find our beat.
Ah, yes. I love it, Morgan.
Thank you.
I love how you interweave the folktale in with your own personal narrative there. It just kind of goes, all goes together. So you had this dream first, and then you went to Jonesboro, and that's kind of where this whole storytelling world, where it cemented you into that world.
Yeah. So I had this dream and I started going to like preschools and daycares as Miss Mo. And then when we moved to Montana, I started a YouTube channel that was geared toward kids. And I became a librarian. And so I would tell them stories. And we had moved to Montana from Virginia, only about 4 hours from Jonesboro, Tennessee. And I'd never heard of Jonesboro. And so I was talking to a friend from Virginia and she's like, you know, we're like 4 hours away from this huge storytelling center. Yeah. And so then I looked it up and I was like, oh my gosh, people are already doing this.
Yeah. And for the listeners who don't know, Jonesboro is like the big holy grail of storytelling festivals.
It's the Mecca, right?
And you were on their main stage last year, and you'll be again this year?
Yeah. So, well, last year I was on a stage called Exchange Place. So they pick seven sort of just new, it's called Exchange Places for kind of people that are new storytellers. They haven't been to the national festival yet. And they've kind of done a few festivals. And so I performed there last year at Exchange Place. And then this year they invited me back to perform as a new voice. So last year I only told one story. There was one concert that was just for Exchange Place, but this year I'll be performing throughout the weekend.
Great.
Yeah. It's very exciting.
But you're looking forward to that. And okay, now, Morgan, do you have any other stories up your sleeve? We got time for maybe one more story.
Ooh.
I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but
no, well, I should be able to tell a story on the spot, right? I'm just trying to think of a good quick one. There once was a king who was very loved by his people and really respected, but he also was a bit mysterious. He always wore a hood, and in the winter it would be this dark woolen hood, and in the summer it was this light linen hood. And that was sort of bizarre. And also, he only got one haircut a year. And whenever the barber came to give him his haircut, he was never seen again. And so while this king was really respected, the roads were nice, the schools had plenty of money, the people were happy, he was also, there was this fear and this sort of mystery about him. Well, the year came, or the day came, for the annual haircut. And there was a barber, a young barber named Liam. And he awoke to find the sign on his door that said, "You are to report at the castle at midnight. Come alone. You have been chosen." Well, I had been chosen, not by a king, but by my husband. You know, we had had this up and down courtship, but eventually we had broken up and gotten back together. We broke up, got back together. Then we really got back together and we got married. And we had chosen each other. And I was very happy. But I wasn't quite so confident that his family was happy he had chosen me. I was very different from everyone in his family. I was taller. I was louder. I was just everything. I'm just more. And as we approached our first Christmas, I just knew it had to be perfect. And I had to get the perfect present and the perfect everything to just land this Christmas so that my in-laws would just not doubt at all that son had made the right choice. Well, Liam, our barber, went to this castle and he knocked on the door and it just sort of opened and it was empty. And there was the king alone. And he was sitting in a chair in front of a mirror in his hood. And he welcomed Liam in and he asked him if he would like anything to eat. And Liam was trembling a little and said, "No, thank you." And the king smiled. He understood the difficulty of the situation. And then he turned to face the mirror and he lowered his hood. And Liam stood there with his scissors in hand and he couldn't move because the king had ears like a horse, and not like big like a horse. The king had ears like a horse. They were brown and they were covered in hair and they pointed straight up to the sky. And Liam thought to himself, "This makes sense." And he felt pity for this king who had walked with this secret. But he also feared for his life, of what would happen to him after he cut the king's hair. But he shaped it and he cut it and he felt pity for the king. And when the haircut was finished, the king looked in his mirror and he smiled. It was the best haircut he'd ever had. And he looked at Liam, who was pale, and he said, "You think you're going to die now, don't you?" And Liam nodded yes. And the king said, "No. But of course you can never leave, obviously. I have to keep this a secret. But you'll go with the others. They all live in my dungeon. It's very comfortable. They have a band, excellent food. I've heard there's even a chess club. You'll be very happy, but you have to live there for." Well, Liam was grateful to not be dying, but he wasn't thrilled about living in a dungeon in a barber colony for the rest of his life. And so he dropped to his knees and he begged the king for mercy, saying, "I have this old mother. She's all alone. I promise I will keep your secret forever." And the king, something in Liam touched his heart. And so he agreed and he let the young man go. Now, this first Christmas that my husband and I were married, I was in graduate school. I was taking my own classes. I was also a teaching assistant. And it was this terrible blizzard came through North Carolina and froze everything, ice on all the power lines. We totally lost power for a week. And we didn't have any backup source of heat. We'd only been married for 3 months. We didn't even have a couch, right? So we had this cast iron skillet that we'd gotten from our neighbor, who was a convicted murderer. And Damon and my husband given him a ride to a bar one night. And as a gift, he brought over this very nice cast iron skillet. And so we poured rubbing alcohol in this cast iron skillet and we lit it on fire. And so we were warming our hands around these alcohol flames. We cooked on it, which you can imagine, eggs cooked over rubbing alcohol fires taste just as good as you're thinking. And I would lay in my bed in a sleeping bag, and I had the stack of papers I had to grade. And so I would just kind of reach my hand out and put a grade and then bring my hand in. It was so cold. It was actually a little warmer outside than in our house. It was so freezing. And so I went outside and I built a fire in the rain. And I held an umbrella under my chin and I finished grading the papers by this fire. And amidst all this, like, it was cold, I was exhausted, I was finishing my own paper, all of these things, we still had to nail this Christmas present. And so we went to this paint your own pottery shop because it had to be homemade and thoughtful, but frugal, just had to be perfect. And so we walked in and we got there just enough time to make something. They were closing soon. And my husband got this huge platter. He was going to make this big artistic bowl for his parents. And I was assigned to make an ornament for his grandma that was going to be spending Christmas with the family. And so we went to work and I was so tired, but I just kind of, I did some stars and little swirlies on this ornament the best I could. And then we were both done and we were the last ones in. They were very kindly staying open for us. And my husband held up this platter and it was awesome, right? There was this tree and it was like this family tree with little branches and twigs with all the spouses and grandkids' names on it. And then I held up my ornament and that's when I saw it. The pre-drilled hole in the ornament was on the bottom of my design. I had gone the whole thing upside down. And I did not have the emotional capacity for this situation. And we didn't have enough money or time to get another ornament. And I just lost it. I just started sobbing. Your family's gonna hate me. Your grandma's gonna hate me. They're all gonna think I'm stupid and they're right. They shouldn't have married me. And I'm just like having a complete breakdown. And my husband, who was in college to become a marriage and family therapist, just sort of patted me on the back and was like, I do not know how to handle this situation. But there was nothing we could do. And so we just put it in the kiln and hoped for the best. Well, Liam went home with this secret and hoped for the best. But the secret began to just burn inside of him until his body was burning. And this fever brought him near death. And the doctor came and checked, and he didn't know what to do. And then, as his mother went out to get some more water, Liam grabbed the doctor and pulled him and said, I have a secret and it's so big. I have to tell someone it's killing me. And the doctor said, I have to keep secrets like this all the time. I'll tell you what to do. You go into the woods behind your house and you find a tree and you share your secret with the tree and it will hold it inside and you get it off of your chest. Well, Liam was desperate. And so as soon as the doctor left, he stumbled out the door and he found a tree behind his house. It was right by the path through the woods. And he grabbed it around the trunk and he just whispered, the king has ears like a horse. The king has ears like a horse. The king has ears like a horse. And he felt this weight just come off of him and the fever broke. And Liam kept the secret, every once in a while returning to the tree to say it out loud, just to get it off his chest. Well, one day there was a musician traveling to the king. The king was having this enormous festival, this huge party. And so this musician was coming and he had a problem of his own. He had just broken his best flute. And so he was looking about to try to find a tree or a branch to make. And he saw this slender, straight tree with perfectly straight branches and it was perfect. And so he cut into this tree and he kind of sang to himself as he whittled away to make this whistle. And he arrived at the castle. And there was feasts and there was juggling and Liam was there. King wanted to keep a close eye on Liam. And finally, there was the musician. And he played his harp and he sang his songs. And then he brought out his whistle. And at first it sounded just like a whistle. But then it's like the wood woke up and it had to share its secret. And so when the musician blew into the whistle, suddenly the air was filled with the song, "The king has ears just like a horse, just like a horse, like a horse. The king has ears just like a horse, neigh, neigh, neigh." And the room fell silent, but the whistle just kept singing even after the musician stopped blowing. "The king has ears just like a horse, just like a horse." And the king came up and he grabbed the whistle and he snapped it in two. He looked around this huge room and he wondered if he could fit all of them in the dungeon. And then he felt a tug on his sleeve. And there was this little boy. And he looked up at the king and he pulled down until the king knelt and could hear him whisper. And the little boy said, "I see that." And the king knew that everyone knew the lie was over. And so he reached up and he lowered his hood and waited for the laughter that did not come. But the little boy reached up his hand and he gently just stroked those soft brown ears. And then he looked at the king and he said, "I think they're beautiful." Well, when I had Christmas with my family, they opened Damon's platter, my husband, and everybody oohed and aahed because it was perfect and beautiful. And then Grandma Virginia opened up the ornament and she looked at it in the box and she said, "Oh, that's so pretty." And I just waited. And then she picked it up by the ribbon and slowly turned her head as she figured out what was going on. And then she began to laugh, this joyous laugh. And she laughed and she laughed until I laughed. And then she looked at me and she whispered, "I think it's beautiful."
Great story, Morgan.
Thank you.
I love stories like that that take something that's we feel is detrimental and it just turns around in the end and makes everything okay.
Yeah, it does. I think that's what life is. We just keep taking things that are broken and figure out we're okay.
Well, Morgan, I really appreciate your stories today. We're getting a little short on time, but before we let you go, do you have a website you can tell our listeners about how to find out more about you?
Yeah, my website is Mo Reynolds, MoReynolds.com. I go by Mo when I perform because my name is spelled a little bit odd as Morgan. It's Morgen, so it's hard to find. So as a storyteller, it's Mo Reynolds. So you can follow me on Instagram. I'm Miss Mo Reynolds, or my website is MoReynolds.com.
Great. And do you have any parting words of wisdom for us before we let you go?
I would just say, share your stories with as many people as you can. And if there are stories that you have or your parents have or your grandparents have, to write them down, to record them, to gather stories as much as you can. Because when we lose people, we lose their stories.
Exactly.
And it's so valuable to gather and record in whatever way works for you.
Right. Very good sentiments to end the segment with. Thanks again, Mo. Take care. Thanks for being our guest.
Thank you so much. You bet.
We're going to take a break from our show for station identification and to make a few announcements. You're listening to So What's Your Story here on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. Our show is sponsored by the Houston Storytellers Guild. The Guild puts on numerous storytelling events, including a monthly story swap the fourth Tuesday of every month that everyone is invited to attend. For more information about the Guild, go to houstonstorytellers.org. And while you're on that same website, click on the link to our program, So What's Your Story? And you'll see archives from our show dating all the way back to 2008. And we're also on Facebook. Just go to So What's Your Story on Facebook for more information and updates about our radio show. And don't forget our friends at the Moth Storytelling Organization. The Moth holds monthly story slams the second Tuesday of every month down at the Warehouse Live on Emanuel Street. Well, now we're going to hear from Kate Dudding. Kate is an award-winning author and storyteller who shares entertaining and heartwarming stories at festivals, museums, schools, libraries, and senior centers, anywhere people can gather to enjoy stories. A particular interest of Kate's is giving a voice to people from the past, people who have made a difference in their community or in the world. Hey, Kate, welcome to So What's Your Story?
What's my story? Well, I've been telling stories since 1995, which was when I fell in love with the art form of storytelling. I experienced it by taking my son to enriching activities at the New York State Museum. I live near the capital of New York State, Albany, halfway between New York City and Montreal. And some of these educational opportunities involve storytellers. And while I've loved theater all my life, I never experienced storytelling. And it was wonderful.
Great.
So I had to do it.
Well, let's hear your first story, Kate.
Okay. I hope you have at least one friend that you can call upon when you need to be rescued. Maybe your car has broken down, or, you know, there are so many ways you can need rescuing. Julia Child was that kind of friend. And she rescued many, many people over the course of her life. For instance, anyone who read any of her cookbooks, she rescued them. For instance, in her first book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, she has a recipe for hollandaise sauce. It includes the ingredients, the equipment you need, and the instructions on how to make it. But Julia didn't stop there. No, she included what to do if the hollandaise sauce was too thick, if it was too thin, or, heaven forbid, the ingredients separated. And she also included how to heat it up the next day. I can't count the number of people she must have rescued with the too thick hollandaise or too thin, or horrors, the separating hollandaise sauce. And that's just one of her thousands of recipes. She also helped rescue people via her television show. Now, I was only a casual watcher of her shows, but even I came away with two pieces of advice that I've always remembered. The first one was, never apologize. If necessary, rename. The second piece of advice was, if something happens in the kitchen and no one else is there, who's to know? Which I took to mean, if the chicken hits the floor and you wash it off and you'd be willing to eat it, keep your mouth shut. Now, the third group of people that she helped were her actual real-life friends. For instance, when she and her husband, Paul, moved to Cambridge, Massachusetts, shortly before her first book was published, one of her next door neighbors was a young caterer. Of course, they became friends. They had so much in common. And it wasn't too long before the young caterer confessed, Julia, I'm so new at this. I'm afraid I'm going to make a horrendous mistake at one of my meals that I'm preparing. And that information will spread all over Cambridge and I'll never get another catering job again. Well, dearie, if that happens, give me a telephone call and I'll try to help. Of course, that day came. Julia, I'm here at Harvard. I'm supposed to serve lunch to 50 Europeans in 20 minutes, and I burned the borscht. Oh, well, do you have... Oh, but Julia, at least I didn't scrape the burned part off of the bottom of the pan, so there are no black flecks, and I've poured the borscht into another vat. But, oh, it still tastes scorched, Julia. Well, do you have any lemons, dearie? Yes, I do. Squeeze a lot of lemon juice in there. That'll help kill the scorched taste. And be sure you serve it with a lot of sour cream and parsley. Now, when you're getting ready to serve it, I want you to use your most impressive tureen. That's a big bowl that you serve soup from. And When you enter the dining room, I want you to pause and announce smoked borscht. The caterer later said, I learned so much from that one phone call. I learned a lesson in cooking, a lesson in presentation, but most importantly, a lesson in confidence. And I tell that story, I call that story Julia to the rescue.
Smoked borscht. I love it. You know, I read something about Julia Child Kate. She was some kind of a spy in World War II. Had you heard about that?
Yes. I have a whole hour program on Julia. And so I've read several biographies about her and a book that she wrote with her great nephew. She worked for the predecessor of the CIA. And she was what I would call an intelligence officer. She would read all the information coming into, she was stationed in India and then in China. And all the information coming into each office. And she came up with a classification system so that the information would then be disseminated to the correct people. When she was in China, she had a staff of 12 under her. She generally said she was a clerk, but she was an information officer.
Wow.
That she was rather offhand about it, that, you know, I was just a clerk, but
right,
that wasn't the case.
Very humble about it.
Yes.
Well, I got to read her biography. She was a fascinating person.
Yes.
So, now tell us about, before we get to your next story, because I know you got at least a couple up your sleeve here. You have a website I stumbled across. It's called Americans All of Us, that performs kind of a service. What could you tell us about that website? What do you do with that?
When Trump was elected, I was very depressed. And his whole campaign, I thought, was dividing the country.
Right.
And I hated that. I still do. And so I wanted to make available some stories of people of all different backgrounds helping each other. And my hope was that other storytellers would see these stories and tell them. But it helped me personally just collecting them. It wasn't that hard to find. I don't know. I probably have 3 or 4 dozen stories that I found in the news about people being kind to other people.
Yeah, that's good. And it's called AmericansAllOfUs.com.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So if we want to see people being nice to each other for once,
yes,
we'll go to that.
Yes. Site. You know, I mean, one story was, I remember this image because it was a news article that someone was trying to commit suicide by jumping off a bridge, and 20 people were helping. Somebody had grabbed onto the person who was going to jump, and then there were people grabbing onto the first helper.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They stayed, you know, 20 minutes or something before everyone was safe again.
Wow, and that's inspiring.
Yeah,
because you hear stories like that, and then you hear stories of people saying "jump, jump," you know. So it's good to hear that kind of story.
Right.
Well, let's hear another story, Kate.
Okay, this is a personal story. I tell some personal stories, but most of my stories are about such as Julia Child, real people who made a difference. But this is a relatively recent a personal story, and I call it What I Learned from Bill Murray. I imagine that all of us were forced to do new activities because of the pandemic. For me, I had to walk the streets. You see, my preferred form of exercise is taking dance classes at my senior center. But once the pandemic hit my area, the senior center was closed. So I had to walk the streets of my neighborhood to get some exercise. And, you know, it was very scary then and stressful. And in those times, I need even more exercise. So walking the streets seemed to be the best choice, but I had tried doing that before and found it too boring and had never made a habit of it. But there wasn't anything else to do, really. So off I went. And after a few days, I fell into a pattern of, to almost everyone I met, I would say, "Good morning. I've got a quick, silly joke." And then I tell a joke such as, "Do you know why Noah did not fish much when he was on the ark? He only had two worms." Now, every day I would go out and I'd have a new joke of the day in case I ran into the people I ran into the day before. But pretty soon I realized I made a better connection with my neighbors if I could come up with a joke that fit the day. For instance, if it looked like it was going to rain, I would tell this joke. "Do you know what's worse than raining cats and dogs? Hailing taxi cabs." That has quite a visual aspect to it. Or if it was one of those hot, buggy summer mornings, when you're constantly waving your hand in front of your face to keep the bugs away from you. My neighbor calls that a windshield wiper day. If it was that kind of day, I would tell, "Do you know why frogs are so happy? They get to eat what bugs them." Now, one day there were apparently two brothers playing soccer on their front lawn. Now, usually I don't interrupt people who are busy, but the joke of the day was about soccer, so I couldn't resist. I went up to them and said, "Excuse me, I've got a joke about soccer." So they came a little closer, still social distance. And then I said, "Do you know why Cinderella was thrown off her soccer team?" The older one looked like he was in high school, said no immediately. But the younger one, who looked about to be a fifth grader, I could see he was thinking. His eyes were going back and forth. And he said, "Cinderella was thrown off her soccer team because she ran away from the ball." And I said, "Yes, exactly." So over the months, I started to develop go-to jokes. For instance, if I met a man I hadn't met before, I would say, "Do you know why the roofer did not charge for the shingles? They were on the house." And if there were somebody walking a dog, especially if they were walking two dogs, I tell them, "Do you know why the man named his dogs Rolex and Timex? They were his watchdogs." Now, it took me a little while, but I realized eventually that I needed to be a giver and not a taker. A giver of laughter, not a taker of time. So that's why I always start out by saying good morning, because I'm watching their reaction. Do they stop walking? Do they reply? Do they look me in the eye? But if they just sort of wave, that's fine. Everyone was dealing with a pandemic as best they could. And if they needed solitude while they were walking, that was fine. I didn't want to, I learned not to interrupt. But it turns out there are groups of people that I just will never tell a joke to. For instance, if the dog walkers are cleaning up after their dogs, I don't interrupt them. I don't want them to make a miss move or they're busy, they want to concentrate. I can wait until another time to share the Rolex and Timex joke. And then there are the moving targets, the people on bicycles or the joggers, especially if they're going uphill. They're just trying to breathe hard enough to make it. But I sort of broke that rule once. Now, I was the one who was walking up the hill. I was two driveways away from the top of the hill when two joggers came over the hill and started jogging down towards me on my side of the road. So I stepped into the driveway so we wouldn't have to do the social distancing dance. And as I was waiting for them to come past me, I realized one, they weren't moving very quickly. And two, the joke of the day was a quickie. So I went for it. Good morning. I have a quick, silly joke. Do you know what the fish said when it hit the cement wall? The woman immediately said, no. I replied, damn.
Oh,
And as they slowly passed me, the man said, nice one. Now, the reactions. You may be wondering what sort of reactions I've gotten. Well, there's a whole spectrum of laughter from a quiet chuckle to a louder guffaw to my favorite, a snort. I really like that. And the remarks, they usually, often people say thank you. My favorite was, what a great way to start a day.
sure.
But occasionally I get, oh, or obviously fake laughter. And I go, oh, either they didn't want a joke or they didn't get the joke. So I just quickly say, thanks for listening, and I head off. But there's a layer of positive reactions above these remarks. The next layer up is people who request jokes. They recognize me and they say, do you have a new joke today? I say, of course. And then I've gotten requests from people in cars. The first person who stopped their car was one of my walking requesters. And he said, do I still get a joke if I'm not walking? I said, of course. And the second time a car stopped, it was Joe driving. Joe is one of my neighbors who I had met before the pandemic started. And he said, oh, Kate, I've enjoyed the jokes you've been telling on the street so much. And then I heard this one and I wanted to tell you, but we didn't run into each other. So he started to tell me the joke he had heard. But the top level of positive feedback is from the friends I've made.
Sure.
Marie, who loves opera, I Googled opera jokes and found some for her. Or Lisa, who had two operations on her hand, and she's a speech therapist in our school system. Or Tony and Linda and their brand new puppy, Brooklyn. These are people who all live more than a half a mile away from me. I never would have met them except for the pandemic. Now, I clearly remember the day this all started that I realized I needed exercise, but I don't know what your memories of the beginning of the pandemic were are, but for me on that day, the pandemic started in Asia, went into Europe, and that morning it had firmly settled in New York City, where their hospitals and morgues were overflowing. And I only live 180 miles north of there. And I didn't know what the situation was going to be when COVID really hit my area. But I thought that morning, damn it, I'm alive today. I'm healthy today. I don't know how long that is going to last. Every person I see, I am going to say good morning to. It's going to prove that I'm alive and they're alive, and I'm just going to do it. Now, I've always lived in the Northeastern United States, and people up here, we rarely say hello to strangers. We may smile or wave, but actually saying hello, but I wasn't going to let that stop me. So off I went and I said good morning. And everyone said good morning back that first morning. And after a few days, I started adding the jokes. And I think for all of us, for them and for me, these s quick, silly jokes were just a tiny respite from our fears and our troubles during the pandemic. So that's how I came to think about what I learned from Bill Murray, the part he played in the movie Groundhog Day. That day came over and over and over again, the same thing, just like the days in the pandemic were quite similar over and over. And in the movie, every day he got a little bit better at handling the situations throughout the day. And I found that every day I get a little bit better at my neighborhood pop-up comedy show. Now, if you're interested in starting your own neighborhood pop-up comedy show, I've put my collection of jokes on my website, www.katedudding.com/jokes.pdf. So, and maybe someday you'll just want some jokes. You can go there and spend a little time browsing through my collection. I think it's 160 pages right now. It's over 3 years of daily jokes.
Kind of famous as the joke lady up there,
Yes,
sounds
that's what I refer to myself as. So I'll just
okay.
end this story by saying, when the worms got on Noah's Ark, do you know why they weren't in apples?
Tell me.
You forget they had to go in pairs.
Oh.
Thanks for listening.
Okay. How is my finger here like a lemon pie?
I don't know. How is your finger like a lemon pie?
It's got meringue on it.
Oh,
It,
I did get the important thing, but I didn't. Oh, I'll have to use that tonight.
well, now you got one more story for us today, Kate. Let's hear that story.
Yes, this is a semi-autobiographical adaptation of a folk tale. Once there was a mother who knit sweaters for her daughter. It started even before her daughter was born. She used the safe colors of white and yellow and green. But once her daughter was born, she used pink and purple yarn. When her daughter grew, so did the sweaters. When her daughter had learned to speak, every time she got a new sweater, she said, "Thanks, Mommy. I like this one the best." When the daughter was 10, she said, "Mommy, would you teach me how to knit?" And her mother replied, "I would love to teach you how to knit, sweetie. I was hoping you'd ask." So the daughter started knitting sweaters, first for Barbie. Barbie isn't very big, so they were short projects, just perfect for a 10-year-old. But as the daughter grew older, she started making sweaters for herself and her father and her brother, and then eventually for her boyfriend, who became her fiancé, who became her husband. And then she made sweaters for their children. But the daughter never made a sweater for her mother. She thought of it once, but quickly dismissed the idea with thinking, "Oh, whenever mom sees a sweater pattern that she likes, she makes it for herself." The daughter made other things for her mother, like embroidered pictures, but she never made a sweater. The last sweater the mother made for the daughter, that was a red sweater, a nice, cheery Christmas red color. And the mother put a pattern of raised hearts across the shoulders. When the mother gave that sweater to her daughter, the daughter said, "Thanks, Mom. I like this one the best." Unfortunately, 18 months after the mother gave the daughter that sweater, the mother died. The daughter wore that sweater many, many times, and every time she wore it, she felt her mother's love. But eventually, time passed. The sweater, well, it was pretty well worn out. The elbows were almost popping through. The yarn was very thin at the cuffs and the bottom. The daughter went to put it on one day and she said, "Oh, this sweater looks too ratty. I just can't wear it. But it's the last sweater my mother ever made for me. Isn't there something I can do?" So she looked at it and she thought, "Oh, I could take the sleeves off the sweater. And from the good yarn in the sleeves, I could mend the weak parts in the body of the sweater. Then I'd have a vest to wear." That's just what she did. She wore that vest many, many times, and every time she wore it, she felt her mother's love. Time passed, and eventually the vest got really ratty. One day the daughter went to put it on and thought, "Oh, this is too ratty to wear, but it's from the last sweater my mother made. Isn't there something I can do?" She looked and she thought, "Well, there's still some good yarn left in the vest. I'll take it all apart and see how much yarn I have and see what I can make with it." She ended up with a good sized ball about the size of a coconut. She said, "I could make a scarf for myself out of that, and I'll put that raised pattern of hearts all over the scarf." That's just what she did. She wore that scarf many, many times, and every time she wore it, she felt her mother's love. Time passed, and as you've probably guessed, eventually even the scarf got too ratty to wear. On the day the daughter realized that, she thought again, "Oh, it's too ratty to wear, but it's from the last sweater my mother made for me. Isn't there something I can do?" She looked, she thought. "There still is a little bit of good yarn left. I'll take it all apart and see how much I have and what I could do with it." She ended up with a ball about the size of a grapefruit. "Ooh, that's not big enough to make anything I can wear. But I could make a Christmas ornament out of it." So she made a four-pointed star out of that red yarn, and she put the pattern of the raised hearts right in the middle of that star. And she knew that whenever she saw that Christmas ornament, she would feel her mother's love.
Oh.
But it wasn't Christmas time yet, so she put that Christmas star away with her other Christmas ornaments. And as she was cleaning up, she had one piece of yarn left. It was only 3 inches long. She thought, "I know it's ridiculous to waste any time thinking about this, but is there anything I can do with this piece of yarn?" She looked and she thought, and then she smiled because she was a storyteller as well as a knitter. And from that last piece of yarn, the daughter made this story for her mother. And she knew that whenever she told it, she would feel her mother's love.
Oh, I love it. We're on radio, so our listeners can't see, but you held up that actual Christmas ornament.
Yes, well, first I made the story, and then I realized I'm going to have to make an ornament.
Because when you held that up and I saw it, I was thinking, well, how autobiographical is this story?
Well, the front end about the mother and the daughter, that's true. And the last sweater my mother made me was indeed a red sweater with a pattern of raised hearts. It has not worn out, however.
Well, Kate, really, really enjoying your stories today. Okay, and your website again is
www.katedudding, that's KATE, D as in David, U, two more D's as in David, ING. Dot com.
katedudding.com. Great. Okay, Kate. Well, thank you so much for being our guest here on So What's Your Story, and good luck to you in all your endeavors.
Thank you very much, Eric.
Well, that is our show for today, folks. I'd like to thank our guests, Morgan Reynolds and Kate Dudding. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Eric Heen, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we want you to always remember that it's never too late to live happily ever after.
You say you're not from Texas. man, as if I couldn't tell. Well, you think you pull your boots on right and wear your hat so well. So pour to me my laughter, as I sure do understand. Even Moses got excited when he saw the promised land. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. So I was born and raised in Texas, and it means so much to me. And though my girl comes from down in Georgia, we were up in Tennessee. And as we were driving down the highway, she asked me, baby, what's so great? How come you're always going on about your Lone Star State? I said, that's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. All the road, it looks so lovely. She stood there on the side, and she grew small in my mirror as I watched her wave goodbye.
Listening to your favorite KPFT program could not be easier. Online at kpft.org, through your smart speaker, Alexa, or Google Assistant, and now over the air at 90.1 FM and 90.1 HD2, Houston's community station, KPFT.
Greetings. KPFT is holding an election to seat listener members like yourself on the local station board. In an effort to make this election financially and environmentally sustainable, we will use primarily electronic ballots. If you are eligible to vote in this election and we do not have your email on file or your email has bounced, you may receive a text message or phone call from election staff with instructions on how to provide us your current email address. E-ballots will hit your inbox on August 15th, and you will have until September 30th to cast your vote. Visit elections.pacifica.org for more information or leave a voicemail on 213-635-9363. It's 90.1 FM KPFT, KPFT FM HD1 and HD2 in Houston, and online at kpft.org.
It's 90.1 KPFT. Time to check in with the R&R show.
You see, Tom is taking all these psychology classes because he's going to be a psychotherapist. The problem is, when they ask him why he wanted to do it, it always gets back to just look up the name Ronnie Renfro.
It's that I've spent all of my adult life in broadcasting, the music business, show business, as we say. It's presented a number of questions for me over the years. Why?
Well,
did he do that?
Exactly.
Why did she do that? Why is it like this? And so I'm searching for answers here.
I hear that a lot of people in the radio business, TV business, media, they're childlike and they live in their own little world.
Kinda.
I have.